The Brothers Wiss. The Brothers Wiss, Brothers Wiss. The Brothers Wiss. The Brothers.
You're now listening to Greg. It's the Brothers Wisp. Let's take a ride through space on this.
Hey everybody, this is Greg with the Brothers Wisp, number 109. Tonight we have with us one Mike Hammett from Chicagoland.
How's it going?
And then also right next to him is T-Cent from Colorado Land.
Thanks, Greg.
Yeah, for sure.
Tommy Krogan.
T-Cent, as it were.
Yeah, T-Cent's really great, actually.
Yeah. You just make it all one. T-E-E-Z-E-N-T. T-Cent. Let's see. Yeah, dude, you're missing out. So we have a... oh, my goodness. We have a couple of new... patrons this go around. We have our first Greek patron.
Yeah, and, I actually asked my Greek friend, and he pronounced it, and it's exactly what it looks like.
All right. Well, I'm going to take a swing at it and just see how it comes out. All right. So he can correct us later. I'm going to say Eleftherios Lavakis. Because I put it into Google Translate and told it it was Greek and had it read it to me, and that's kind of how it came out, so I'm not sure if that's right or not, but that's kind of what Google Translate told me.
This might be the most research we've ever put into how to pronounce somebody's name.
It's a long one. And then we also have Bryce Quig Hartman. So we had two new patrons this go around, which I am very excited about. I love seeing new faces pop in there. And they become patrons by going to patreon.com/thebrotherswisp. You throw us a couple of bones, and then you get access to our patron-only Slack, where a lot of this good action comes from. There's a lot more Discord. Man, we have really been getting on those threads lately. People have really been figuring out how to use them. I'm still kind of resistant to the threads, but I'm starting to learn to use them a little bit more, I suppose.
Yet, I would use them occasionally for a long time, but it seems like if somebody else is doing it, then I'm more likely to do it because I remember.
But when I see a thread that's got like 30 entries in there, I'm like, do I really want to spend the time to go in there and do it? So maybe it kind of has the opposite effect on me. Maybe I just kind of assume it's like, oh, that's already been taken care of. I don't have to think about it. Other people have answered that question. Unless it's something I guess I could learn from. I just need to do better about that stuff.
Yeah. For me, the Slack channel is like my go-to learning resource for like just random portions, so that eventually I can, like, I have all these disparate pieces of information and knowledge, and eventually I can connect them together. I have a problem. There's no channel that I'm in that has anything that I haven't read. It's bad. Like, you know, first thing I do in the morning is check Slack.
It's funny, so I left Fibertown April 1st. April Fool's Day was my last day there. And so I got my junior engineer that's still there. I got him into our Slack. I was like, in case you need to ask me a question really quick, here's a simple method to do that. And just before, I think it was like 2 days, the day before I think I left, there was that DNS issue that happened where two of my resolvers simultaneously stopped resolving. You know, it was that, I don't want to get into it because we already talked about it, but I threw it in the Brothers of Wisp, I think in the general channel or something like that. And within about 5 minutes, John had responded and said, yeah, I see that it's on the, where did he find it? Maybe on the Nanog list or something like that. Yeah.
It was Nanog.
He's like, hey, blah, blah, blah. And then here's the fix. And my guy was like, holy cow, you weren't kidding. Dude, it's like, you put something in, these guys are on it. I was like, yeah, bro, it's pretty intense. These guys know a lot of stuff. But jump in there, into the Slack. Bryce, really interesting guy. He is not in IT, like pretty much at all. He works for a marketing company that just does some marketing initiatives kind of around technology and networking and things like that. And so he was doing a lot of research, found us, and thought it was interesting. So he became part of it. So I think it's crazy how many differing viewpoints and perspectives we're starting to get in there, you know. So it's everybody's got value. Throw your voice in there. You never know how you're going to help somebody else. I think it's really fascinating how the community's starting to really take off. Oh my goodness. Let's see. What else do we have? We have one last bit of front matter. It is our sponsor today, which is Sonar, sonar.software. It's the scalable, intuitive, comprehensive ISP billing and operational support system. So you want to learn more, go to sonar.software. We actually have a Sonar channel. I always spit that out. There's a lot of stuff going in there, very active in there. Everybody's asking about version 2. And that's all I'm going to say about that, because I don't know anything else about it, because I don't use it. I don't do any billing system right at the moment. Thankfully, I'm transitioning to a place where hopefully I don't have to think about that stuff quite as often.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great way. Yeah, I thought we had an interview for Sonar, and that was one of the few that I didn't screw up, so. I think that was... So, there should be one going on the Brothers Wisp YouTube channel eventually, I think.
Yeah, I put a bunch of videos up there a while ago. Haven't finished making the like post on the website yet. I'll talk to Greg about that when we're done.
Ugh, make me do work. All right, so while we're talking about it, and Thomas is gone for the second time in a row. This is insanity. We probably need to check on him, make sure he's still alive. I don't think he's ever missed two in a row. Thankfully, hopefully that means he's got his sleeping schedule back sorted, so he's back to the human race, normal people hours. But having said that, Unimus version 2.0.0 beta 2 is being released, and he's desperately trying to get people in there so he can find the bugs, see what they like, what they don't like. Let's see, release notes say some of the highlights are zones for support for remote networks. So I think you can use like proxy agents, right, in a network, and so your master Unimus can kind of reach out and proxy that stuff. So that's pretty neat. What else? I remember there being something else that was pretty cool.
UX improvements and device tags. And then you can do device tag inside of zones. It's the zone whole portion of it is pretty a significant rewrite slash kind of brand new product for Unimus for the 2.0 stuff. Just because I'm running that extra little bit of code that's not actually the product itself is probably pretty code intensive and time intensive. So
yeah,
cool. pretty big update. If you have a network where you have separated stuff and have to net into your devices specifically, that would be a hugely big benefit for people like that.
Bigly change.
Yep.
Let's see what else is in there. He did config push scheduling. So, you know, he's got configuration push stuff in there, and you can actually schedule that. I think that was one Mike complained a lot about and then never used. Let's see what else.
I have now configured it. I noticed that when I was trying to schedule something to be every 2 weeks. And that wasn't one of the native configuration, you know, schedules. And so I was like, well, let's try out the cron configuration, or, you know, time schedule. And I'm playing around with cron. And of course, cron doesn't let you do it anything every 2 weeks either. So I end up doing it first and the 15th. I figured that's probably close enough. Except Unimus uses a six position cron expression, and the generators I was using only output 5. And Unimus was expecting 6, and so I wasn't even aware there was more than one way of doing cron until that point. So keep that in mind, I guess, anywhere that you're working with cron, that there's more than one format.
Very fun.
At least a 5 and a 6 field format. I mean, God. Cron, I'm like you. If I ever have to use cron, I use a generator. Because, dear God, remembering that stuff would be beyond me.
That's a little funky sometimes. Let's see, what else does he have in there? He's got pushback has been a Unimus over API. That does sound very new. 18 new device types in there, and Observium and PRTG support for NMS Sync. So that's pretty cool. Pretty cool stuff. I'm sure he'll talk your ear off about it. Or as he always says, you can find him on the live chat. Apparently he loves live chatting with people. Or maybe he's paying for it and he just wants to get his money's worth. So
maybe we should go into the Unimus live chat and make sure he's still alive.
Let's do that after this. Let's bug him. Bug him after this. So something that hit my mailbox just the other day, which I thought was interesting, is there's a access control company called ZK Access or ZKT, I think. It just depends on what you're looking at. Oh, ZK Techo maybe is what they've rebranded as.
Oh, I've seen Facebook ads for those guys.
Yeah, so I know somebody who installed a bunch of their stuff in a day. I think it was JJ Boyd. At one point did that with a lot of their stuff. Man, their site is like not loading right now. Doesn't bode well for them. Yep. But they sent me.
Tried the.
Yeah, it's dead currently. But the link I thought was interesting. They sent one about, so they had done some decent facial recognition stuff, you know, that kind of does that 3-point thing. So you can't just use like a picture to fake access. So the idea being if, I used to work for a data center group and access control was a big part of it. And so the idea of using a facial recognition system is as people walk in, it can recognize their face and automatically unlock the door. So you don't even have to actually touch anything. And the idea of this one is you can walk up and not only does it recognize your face, but you can also, the system can also enforce masks to be worn. So it can look at your face, recognize that you're not wearing a mask, and either deny you access or I guess send an alert saying, hey, this fool's not wearing a mask and he's trying to get in. But not only that, but it can also take your body temperature. And so if you have a fever, it can alert them that you have a fever when you're trying to come in. So I thought that was pretty crazy. It sounded like something they probably already had in the system, because I can't imagine they would have spun that up in like a month's time, because that sounds like some pretty complicated algorithms they would have had to put in there.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if there's. I know cameras without the filtering could do like IR sensing, and maybe there's something in that with the, you know, your body temperature changes, so you're. So you come up different in the infrared spectrum, but
I wonder if they did that so that they could see, you know, like if it's a picture, it's obviously going to be pretty cold, right? Or a vast difference between a human's body temperature. So maybe that's one of the points they use for detection of, hey, this is just somebody trying to trick me or something like that.
But apparently, yeah, it could be.
The temperature scanners were already in their systems. They also mentioned that they have like, what was it? Metal detectors, you know, kind of walk through metal detectors that also do temperature sensing on people and things like that. So I didn't realize that was in such high demand that it was already built into a lot of equipment. But I guess that just goes to show how little I really know about that sort of thing in general. I thought it was kind of interesting, though, right? The idea that while we understand people still have to come to it. So like at the data center right now, I think they've stepped up so that they have this procedure where they are going through and like disinfecting every touch point constantly, because we do, or they do, I don't get to say we anymore, they do two-factor authentication, right? So you got a badge and a fingerprint. So you're having to physically touch that thing every time. So every person that comes in and out has to physically touch that thing. So in a pandemic, what's the last thing you want to do? It's touch things. So the idea of having a lot of this stuff touchless is pretty fascinating. I guess you could have it touchless with like the automatic door opener, so it would just kind of open it for you, so you could really be as hands off as possible. I don't know how more hands off.
Couldn't get a fingerprint scanner to be touchless. That would be a great piece of equipment, though.
Oh my gosh!
You just have to. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't.
I mean, I guess if you took a picture of your thumbprint, you could do a something kind of. But still, like. Ugh, no. Man, that sounds like it kind of sucks. Well, such is life.
Yeah, I just found it interesting. Mm-hmm. I've seen a lot of creative marketing. I've already started seeing, I don't actually watch TV, but I watch Hulu and Netflix and all that stuff. So on Hulu, I've started seeing very specific Corona-based ads coming through. So it really didn't take the marketing people more than about a month to start spinning up that stuff and sticking it out there, which is to be expected.
Within a week, I watch with my parents. We'll watch Forged in Fire every once in a while when I'm visiting. And within a week of this stuff going down, we were duck watching advertisements, and they had, it was a Burger King or Wendy's or something, had something, a new ad, and we were like, wow, you guys are freaking on top of it. So
I saw a Burger King ad that said, stay on your couch, you know, to stay safe and keep everybody else safe. And they said, we want to thank you, Couch Potato Atriots or something like that. It was pretty bananas. I loved it. But then also saw a ton of car commercials. Everybody saying, oh, we're going to defer payments for 3 months or 90 days or whatever it is, you know. And we're here caring about you and looking out for you. Man,
oh, yeah.
I don't know too many payments. People that are really trying to buy a vehicle right now. I mean, I assume some people still have to, but it seems like if you could, you would hold off at the moment.
Yeah. I would. Yeah, don't rely, because a lot of those places, you don't have to make payments, but you're still accruing interest. So make sure you're actually paying stuff. And if you don't have to make payments right now, pay so that you're decreasing the principal of whatever your loan or thing is, so that you can continue decreasing that stuff.
I mean, I saw, I
think, if you have money,
Ford commercials doing it. I think I saw, I know I saw Lexus commercials talking about it, and I was thinking, I don't know that, you know what I mean? It's like, you usually think of that as kind of more of a luxury vehicle, and I don't know how many people are actually out there looking to buy a luxury vehicle, even if they can get deferred payments for a while. And well, I mean, you got that stimulus check burning a hole in your pocket. I guess maybe you'll go
yeah.
and get something like that.
That's a great down payment for a Lexus, people.
Yeah, for sure. All right, Mikey, tell us about this Hidden Master DNS thing. Crouching Tiger, Hidden Master DNS.
Sure. And so a lot of us probably just have a single authoritative DNS server running on our network. You spun up sometime and promptly forgot about, other than when you were needing to make changes. I'll say that I've done this in nearly every hat that I've worn. I started to think about it, you know, how I could make that a bit more resilient. And over the years, obviously I knew about slave DNS servers, I just never set one up. But then over the years in the Slack, John Osman, I think, was the first guy that tipped me off to the hidden master concept, which is you have your master DNS server that you do all your configuration changes on. But then that server is not put into the name server configuration for your domain at your registrar. The world doesn't know it exists. So then it can't be compromised, or DDoSed or whatever, if people don't know it's there. And then you have some sort of external devices that are the slaves. And so I was looking at, you know, how cool would it be if that was like a little brother's bonus of, you know, we built a network to do all the slave DNS. At which point then I realized that, you know, I wanted to have a nice geographic scope. But then, you know, if you're in New York, and one of the name servers is in Sydney, Australia, you know, a quarter of the lookups that hit that domain are going to go to Sydney. And, you know, then your site's going to load slow, or your mail's going to time out, or whatever. So, like, okay, well, I don't, you know, and the way around that is Anycast. I'm like, I'm not looking to get into building an Anycast network.
I was going to say that would be nice, but somebody would have to sacrifice one of their /24s for us to do it, so.
Yeah, and it's, you know, obtaining one to use is probably not anything within our budget. much less, you know, then, okay, you know, now being able to advertise that all across the world, that's gotten beyond the scale of what I was wanting to do. And so I started looking into it. I was like, well, you know, let's, you know, because when I was figuring out what to do for that, you know, I wanted different hosting companies in different metropolitan area, you know, or, you know, even regions. So that way there was not a, you know, single point of failure, you know. Vulture couldn't go down somehow and just wipe everything out. And so when I was looking at this, I said, okay, well, Hurricane has a free DNS service up to some number of zones and some number of records, you know, and, you know, more than enough for anything I would ever do. and they allow you to do it as a slave or secondary service. Google has one that costs money, but it's like 20 cents per month per zone, and then like 30 cents per million lookups. I'm like, okay, so I'm at like $2 a month. I'm fine with spending $2 a month. And then as I kept going, you know, Packet Clearinghouse has one. A whole bunch of places have a free or low cost secondary DNS service. And so what I've done is I've set up my new master. I just made it a slave of the existing master because it's on an old server I just want to get rid of. Made the new one. And I have another on-site slave. You know, I guess you call it a hidden slave. It's basically just there to get a copy of all the records locally. Should my master, you know, take a dump, I can just change the IP. And, you know, all the other slaves still work. But then I would just go into my domain registrar and I would just put in whatever servers, you know, Google and Hurricane tell me to put in. And then I have hundreds of nodes across the world that are now hosting my DNS, my authoritative DNS. So then it's more resilient. It's faster, and if I screw something up, it doesn't immediately go down.
Right, right.
And so I'm still kind of working out all the steps to do that and something I can publish, so then I can be like, hey, everybody, here's how you can do this in, you know, 10 minutes. Because then I will do that then for all of my hats.
And then for my stuff, I was previously running it out of the two data centers, so two separate locations, and that's what I was doing. I wasn't doing the hidden master, but I had single master and then all those slaves off of that. But I remember in kind of looking at what you were talking about, you were asking the question, can a slave be a slave of a slave? And through a little research, Bind9 allows you to do that. So one slave can actually not necessarily go to the master, but just pull from another slave. So you could do a lot of weird stuff, apparently, if you're trying to flizzle-flazzle maneuver, do some interesting things. It's available to you there. I think I need to move to one of these free services you're talking about. I heard like Cloudflare does a pretty good job of DNS, do they not?
They do, and they have a lot of like on their free tier, they'll do all kinds of cool stuff. You know, DDoS filtering and just all kinds of stuff. I think they'll automatically upgrade it to DNSSEC. You know, no config on your behalf. The problem is with Cloudflare and I think Route 53 from Amazon and some of the others is that it's a closed ecosystem unless you pay like a significant amount of money. I mean, I don't know how significant Amazon is, but like for Cloudflare, it's like they're the only entity unless you're on the enterprise plan. And so then I can't have entity diversity, you know. It's either all Cloudflare or no Cloudflare, unless you're going to spend money. And of course it says, you know, call for more information on enterprise. So I don't know what it is, but the next cheaper plan is $200. I'm like, $200 a month isn't worth even the best of DNS hosting for me. But yeah, you know, pick a couple services, and that way, you know, it'll still work somewhere.
I know I don't think any of the DNS stuff that I personally host, and you know, if gregsoul.com goes down for a half hour, I don't think anybody in the world will notice. So it's not really going to negatively impact me too much. But even at the data center, well, I guess I had enough diversity at the data center, so you know, it would still survive. So I guess that's, I mean, because they were running two completely separate systems, so they're really. Yeah, I'm trying to think of, like, you're talking about that single entity diversity. It was still me under control of it, but it really was running off two completely different networks in two different places. So I guess I did have that redundancy in there, wherein if I went to an individual host, like a provider, I wouldn't, I guess, theoretically have the control like you're talking about. But, yeah, what am I doing? It doesn't matter enough, I don't think. Because they probably do get, like, what, 4 or 5 nines of uptime a year out of those services, so I'm worried about that's good enough for me.
DNS, oh yeah, I bet you could probably get really, really high with that.
Yeah,
like my thought was, okay, so if I want something off net, but I still want my local for my master, so it's the same amount of setup work. It's just sign up for another account and then type in another IP address. Done.
Yeah.
And so then now I have two. Back to your, you know, slave of a slave thing, I actually have that running right now. All three servers are still talking to each other. I still have my original master, which then slaves to what will be the new master, and then the new hidden slave is talking to that. The new hidden master that's still a slave. And most of the zones are making it all the way through. I say most in that I'm also using bind views, because I have in my mail server environment, there are more internal servers than external facing servers. And so then I didn't want to expose my internal servers, you know, on public IPs if they didn't need to be, you know, don't need to have, you know, private IP space in my public DNS zones. So I used views to have a split DNS. And for my public view, everything, both forward and reverse, is making it all the way through. For my internal view, only my forward is making it the last hop. I haven't figured out why the internal doesn't make the last hop. And then obviously, you know, I'm not going to send my internal zones out to Google because that's pointless. I still have to make sure that it propagates internally.
For sure.
That's a pretty cool system. I don't really
care if people can resolve. If they somehow guess one of my internal whatever at gregsoul.com and they can resolve to a private IP, I don't care. It's not going to hurt me any. I guess theoretically you're supposed to worry about that stuff, you know, because then they'll know your internal scheme and they're better equipped to hack you. But I don't have anything worth messing with. I don't. Security by obscurity. I think it's security by nobody cares about me. It's more what it is.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Like, you'll have these security guys that it's like, if you do anything less than perfect, you might as well just set it on fire. But like, I'm like, well, if you stop the drive-by, you know, script kiddies, and if you're not something anybody gives a crap about, then you're fine. You know, I don't need NSA level security because nobody cares.
And arguably there's a big group of security people who say that as long as you are not the lowest hanging fruit,
right,
you're going to be shiny. And you really don't want to be the highest hanging fruit either, because somebody's going to just be like, oh,
sure.
Yeah. So, you know, whatever you're doing.
A real challenge here. Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't stand out. Keep your head down.
Yeah. be the, you know, don't be more painful than you're worth. And just like all those middle European countries who weren't invaded in World War II, you were more trouble than you were worth for either side, so nobody invaded you.
Yeah.
It's going to make people feel bad.
Actually, I know lots of people on Facebook that are more pain than they're worth.
Isn't are that you the one definition?
I'm sure I am to some people.
I thought so. All right. Well, that's pretty cool, Mike. I'm curious to see where you're going to end up with all this stuff in a month and a half or 2 months when you've got a bow on top of all of it and you're satisfied with the system. Hopefully you'll check back in and let us know what it looks like.
Sure.
Excellent. And also, of the other ones that are kind of out there and available, give me a rundown on which one you think is the best once you've poked around, because I got to move my stuff to something in like the next week or two. So, well, maybe not even that fast, but I'd like to get it done. Just so I have a little list of things I need to complete, and that's on there. I need to scratch it off.
Sure.
I'll let you do the legwork for me.
Not a problem.
All right. Well, let's talk about a little bit of Microtik stuff. There's a little chunk in here. This week, wasn't it this week? Yeah, it was this week that we were supposed to be at Kansas City. We were supposed to be doing the MUM. And so I went ahead and did my Microtik presentation. It was Ansible Microtik Mass Configuration Fast. And I recorded the video and I uploaded all that stuff. It's right about 32 minutes. And I had 30 minutes to do it. So that's, I mean, I ran over a little bit, but it was pretty good. Maybe there was a little bit extra exposition that I wouldn't have put in at the actual presentation, but who knows. I had some people ask various questions about why you would even bother doing Ansible when there's other tools that you could use that are maybe very specific for Microtik or what have you. To that I said, well, you're right, a tool that's made specifically for networking might do the job better, but this does a very good job of mass configuring your Microtik stuff and your network stuff in general. I've come to find that Ansible really is a networking product. I mean, really, like if you look at their modules, they have, I think over, golly, I don't know all the numbers off the top of my head, but I think they have like 35 or 4,000 modules, and over a third of them are network specific. So there's a lot of time and attention put into it. But not only does it do your Microtik stuff, but it'll do all of your Cisco kit. It'll do all of your F5s. It'll do your servers. It'll do your firewalls. So it's not just this one specific thing. It kind of will help you automate. It'll drag you kicking and screaming into DevOps, you know, for all of your stuff. But, you know, it gives you a safe place where you can kind of dip your toe in. And I came at this when I very first started looking at this Ansible stuff of not knowing anything about it. And I looked where were all the holes that I couldn't figure out that didn't make sense that I had to really dig for. And I tried to supply all that stuff in this. So it's really just, I know nothing to, in 30 minutes, you should be able to install it and do mass configuration stuff of basic things. So if you guys are interested, pop in there, put it to 2x speed and get through it in 15 minutes and then try some of the stuff and let me know how you go.
So when did you first have any experiences with Ansible?
Oh man, I went to my buddy Jimmy invited me to an Ansible networking workshop in Dallas 6 months ago, something like that.
Okay.
And so I did that and then I studied a little bit and tried a little bit and built some playbooks and then took a break for a while and then came back to it hot and heavy for another little bit. And I've been much more hot and heavy on it here lately. So I don't know. I have really, in all honesty, probably about a month of really working with it. Maybe somewhere in there. I'm going to get a lot more time under the hood soon, though.
Sure. Well, given that that's now your day job, I would, I would expect so.
Yeah, for anybody listening, you can see the red hat right there. They legitimately, when you join Red Hat, they send you a red fedora, and on the inside it's got Red Hat. I mean, they're made just for Red Hat, so that's pretty cool. So yeah, I actually get to do this for a living now. Well, I say I get to do it for a living now. They've inundated me with training stuff, and it's weird. The way they're training, kind of, you start at the top and you start going down, and then, okay, on this one training step, it sends you over here to the right, and in this training step, it's got 10 more training steps. So it's like, okay, well, do I complete all of these? Do I go back? And then when you go back, you go down, and then something will kick you off to the right again, and there'll be 5 more training steps. So it's just, it's like this never-ending, expanding universe of things that you need to learn about in all of their training stuff. I got to say one thing for them. There is a plethora of documentation inside that company. So if you ever wanted to know anything about anything they do or think or feel, it is in there. So they just kind of fire hose you with all sorts of stuff. So I'm not sure where they're to. So I'm going in as a solutions architect. So I'm not sure whether to focus on learning all the absolute ins and outs of Ansible first, or should I focus on the sales stuff? Because I'm technically a sales engineer, really, is what the position is. So it's like, do I go through their sales academy? And so I'm just trying to shotgun and do all of it at once. And it's an interesting journey. I'm only a week in. This was my very first week. But so far, I was telling somebody the other day, it's super bizarre to say, but I haven't been this happy in general for quite a while. And this is like, we're in the middle of a pandemic. And somebody went, and I felt really bad, on LinkedIn, somebody sent me a message and said, wow, it's cool that you got a job when everybody else is, you know, losing theirs or blah, blah, blah. And I was like, golly. I mean, that one kind of gut punched me. It made me feel bad. I didn't even know who this guy was. But I said, you know, well, one is I've been working on this job for 8 months. You know, it's not like it just came out of the blue. And I'm very thankful for this opportunity, and I really am. And it's once in a lifetime for me. And I wasn't happy where I was, and I'm moving towards making myself happy. So I'm taking a chance, right? That's what you do. So I'm over there doing my thing. But that's something else. Oh, go ahead, Mike.
Oh, I was going to ask Tommy if he'd ever worked with Ansible.
I played with it for like 30, 45 minutes once when I was setting up. So I got this VM server and a couple of them and set up Proxmox on it. And then I spent like a month setting up a ton of different VMs to be running off of it. And so eventually I was like, there's so many little things in here that I need to just have something else take care of for me. And then I was looking at Ansible and then a few other ones. I think I got my closest was Puppy or something like that.
Puppet.
And Puppet. And then they have like Puppy is their free version or something like that. I can't remember exactly. But I was looking, I was like doing the math in my head of like, how much time am I going to spend setting this up, making this work, versus just doing it for the next 5 VMs that I have to set up and then I'm done. And the math didn't work out, and I was like, all right, I'm just going to live with the way it is. But the more you've been talking about it, it's like I've been really wanting to spend time on it, but I've had a few other projects that have been eating out my time.
Yeah. Well, these last few months, I found what's really interesting about it is if there's something you want to do, I just Google whatever that thing is, Ansible playbook, and odds are somebody else has done it and put the playbook up. So then all I have to do is download it and tell it the server I want it to run against or network device, and then just let it do it. So that's been really nice. that saved me a lot of time already.
The biggest thing for me is that I don't use SSH much for my management stuff. So I have to go into the whole of my network and set that up, which I don't have time for right now.
What do you just have Winbox open your Winbox, MikroTik devices?
Yeah, Winbox for MikroTik stuff. And then now that I have all my, we used to be Webmin for most everything, but now that I have Proxmox running all my VMs for literally everything, I just plug into the bloody device itself now. So that's what I've been doing for now, and we'll see what we end up doing in the future.
Gotcha.
I went in to Ansible about 4 years ago, very briefly. It was the Ubiquity MF-er virus. And I didn't even make the original script. I took somebody else's Ansible script. You know, having never used it, I was like, oh, here's a script that's incomplete or not, like, you know, doesn't do everything. Because it was a pretty dynamic piece of malware. You know, they different variants kept coming out with different things that they were doing to the devices. And so I think the original guy wasn't responding quickly to change. So I just sat down and, you know, I only had one device that was infected, so it was no big deal for me to just fix the one device. But I went through, documented, because there's thousands of WISPs that overnight were losing their networks. And so I just went through step by step, like, you know, set up, I set up a VM with these hardware configs. I clicked this on the setup. I clicked that on the setup and walked them all the way through. And then I had, you know, here's the YAML file that you need for this. Here's the YAML file for that. You know, when you're done running this, here's what your password is going to be for your device. You know, please change it. And, you know, I threw that up on the Ubiquity forum. I put it in the topic, you know, please sticky this, and they never did. But, you know, whatever.
Yeah. But, I mean, that goes to show the power of Ansible. If you can SSH to a thing, you can pretty much control it using Ansible. You can do anything in mass. And so, like you were saying, if it was particularly a problem for WISP that had public IPs on their Ubiquity stuff, right?
Yeah, and I believe it was certain versions of the OS had some sort of, well, there's been a variety of vulnerabilities, but I think it was like a HTTP server exploit that they got in, and then they were able to change things. And the thing was that, like, if it was very time critical that you fixed it, because there was like a 24-hour timer that, like, once it was infected, so 24 or 48, something like that, hours, where once it was infected, after that time expired, it would wipe the configuration or make some sort of change that was catastrophic.
Right.
That then required a truck roll. So it was like, just, you know, how can people get this fixed on their network as quickly as possible? Right.
Instance too, if you know, I mean, you know what your public IP range is, so you could really just put your entire public IP range in there, say, here's the playbook, go, you know?
And
you could deal with the support calls of, you know what? I mean, if you make a change to a router and it has to reboot, you're not going to get a bunch of support calls off that. You know, people are used to their internet going down for a minute and a half. That's no big deal. So really, it's invaluable. So, like, my apartment complex in San Marcos that I can talk about now, it's got like 135 microticks sitting out there. I've got playbooks. So I did the configuration. I bolt configured all those jokers and stuck them out. They haven't powered everything up yet out there, but I immediately found tweaks I needed to make to all their configurations. And so I just wrote a handful of playbooks that really are, hey, what's the CLI command I'm going to put in there? And you just kind of tag those into your playbook. And then I've got a host file that says, here are all of the microticks, go. So as soon as those things come online, I basically just throw a command at it. It's going to go and it's going to take care of everything for me, all in one big swoop. Now, one of the things that is lacking if you're using Engine, which is just the command line stuff, is there's no, like, delegation of control, right? So, like, say I've got a bunch of engineers and I only want Tommy to be able to do a certain set of commands or things like that. Or you can even, in these playbooks, you can write playbooks for troubleshooting, right? Like, if it's some specific customers having problems, you can run a playbook that will connect to a device, do pings, pull information, do all that kind of stuff, pull it back for you, and actually like do the troubleshooting for you if you want it to. So I could delegate Tommy to be able to do just that if you're using like their tower product, which is, you know, it gives you the GUI and stuff that different users can log into, different user levels, and they'll have different access to different things. And it also does accounting and things like that. So it's really good for that kind of stuff. Whereas the engine is just CLI stuff, so there's really no delegation of control. But if you're just a one-man shop and you just need to change the admin password on everything, or, you know, or say you've got two people and you've got 100 microticks total out there in the field and you need to let a guy go, you probably want to change the password on all of your stuff real quick. And this can do it quite literally. I don't know. You tell it to run, and 10 minutes later, it's probably done with every single one of those devices. It's got them all updated, so you'll be safe. It's definitely worth looking at. Especially, like you said, Mike, for stuff that's time-sensitive. You know, you could have a guy... I could pay a guy to sit there for 12 hours and update every one of those microticks one after another. Or I wrote the YAML files, and I made roles out of them, so they're very... modular, almost like functions, you know, in a programming language. And so anybody can go to my GitHub repository, pull those down, and then they just fire it against their routers, and it'll go and update all of the router OS, and then it'll come back and update all of the firmware on the router boards. So it turns 9 or 12 hours into, say it takes you an hour to figure it all out, to watch the video and then use it yourself. You already saved yourself 11 hours just in the first run. So, and then you're up and working, and you can do whatever you want with it. So, very big proponent of that.
I'm going to kind of merge two things you had said recently. So, one thing you had said was something was worth looking into, and you also had made reference to your LinkedIn. And I had pulled up your LinkedIn when you mentioned that. That profile picture, that's something to take a look at.
You like my LinkedIn profile picture? Is that you saying I need to change it to something else?
No, I think it's great.
It's really old. It's hard for me to find a picture where I don't look mean. So that one, I feel like I don't look like I want to eat your children.
No,
that's what my wife says. She says that's why people don't talk to me, because I look mean all the time. She says until I smile. Yeah, I look like a turd, but when I smile, I look okay, so. Or maybe not necessarily approachable, but not somebody who's mad or something. I don't know. I just got resting angry face. Not sure what's wrong with me.
You look like somebody who would probably, like, bench press me consistently. with the bald hair. My brother used to go bald, like, shave his head completely when he was, like, 16, just to be the rebel and such, and he was told that he had to stop doing that because he was terrifying little children by somebody who was trying to help. It's pretty funny. So yeah, no, bald head, just not well known in the American culture for not being somebody who's going to beat the heck out of you.
I don't know. I've seen some bald guys that just genuinely look nice. I guess I just don't have that look on my face normally.
You just don't have the prejudice. You just aren't prejudiced like the rest of us.
I don't know, man. I don't know. Whatever. It's a secret club. I'm not actually supposed to talk about it. So, you know, we've got our own handshake and everything. So let's keep talking about Microtik stuff. There's the Thrift always comes up with the best stuff. He came up with a Microtik HAP AC3. What is that, the FCC loggings? Is that what that stuff is? Because you have to file the FCC if you're going to get stuff sold over in the States. And so they publish all that stuff up. And
who wants to read the model number for the crowd?
Oh, Lord, what's the point? It's holy cow. It is extremely long. There's no point. Just call it the AC3, HAP AC3, because it says it on the outside of the case. But this looks pretty big. If you're expecting it to look the same form factor as the HAP AC2, you're sorely disappointed. I would say it's twice as wide. Same port count. It's got 5 gig ports on it, but it is What'd you say? An inch wider on the left and maybe 4 or 5 inches wider on the right?
Yeah. I mean, it's a substantial.
Oh, there you go. They have rulers next to it. So it's about 26 millimeters by about 14 millimeters. So it's about, the same thickness, but it's significantly wider. It looks like it's got a full-sized USB port. It's got a product information slide in it. So it looks like you can slide it out and write down some product-specific information there and then slide it back in, kind of like HP servers used to have, or maybe Dell's or something.
Yeah.
It's also got a SIM card. So this is going to do cell service dial out. It's actually, if you look at the internal photos, it's got a pretty massive LTE antenna that sits up on top. And then it's got a smaller one that's kind of down halfway through the case. It's significantly larger than the 2.45 gig antennas as well. It's got a huge heat sink on this thing too.
Yeah, that thing is probably, I mean, it's going to stay fairly cool from the looks of it.
It's got a big processor. It's the entire size of the case, right? The heat sink.
Pretty much, yeah. Well, it's covering, you've got 1, 2, 3, 4 maybe? 4 different chips, and then maybe a few other things just from the looks of this, where the thermal paste is on this first picture in the internals. So you've got quite a few different chips in there that are pumping out heat. So that it's doing that is going to be, that's nice. I like that it's so narrow. Like, that's useful.
I didn't hear Thrift speculate on what processor it's going to be or anything like that. So what did he, maybe he said he thought it would be the same processor as the
Audience.
The Audience, that's what it's called.
It's supposed to be basically the Audience, except with, and just the normal HAP form factor, and what was the other thing that he was saying? It doesn't have the secondary 5 gigahertz radio for the backhaul stuff.
Right. The Audience has. The meshing stuff or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Cool.
For those that are wondering, I counted there are 30 characters, including punctuation, in the model number.
Or you could just call it the AC3, which is so much better. I'm so glad they kind of came around to just giving them kind of interesting code names or whatever.
Well, is something that you'd put in somebody's house, and you want something that has a little bit of decency to it, I guess. I don't know.
This specific product, I think, is going to have a limited set of people that are interested in it, but a variant would likely be very popular. I say this specific one because it has LTE. So if you're not interested in doing anything with LTE, you're not going to buy this product. I assume they're going to make one that doesn't have the LTE radio. And, I'm interested to see what that's like.
Well, could you use that as... So I know Thomas used to say at various points in their network, they would put cell backup in there. And then so people could kind of dump out that if the worst case scenario. Maybe you could use that as a tower router that has built-in out-of-band management. So you could LTE into it or something like that.
Yeah, but you can... I mean, there's so many other way cheaper MikroTik products that are... I mean, 5 gigabit... I don't need gigabit ports for management. I don't even need 100 meg ports for management. I have management ports that are 10, not even full duplex. Packet loss on it's horrible, but I don't need anything more.
It does. The case design is really nice, though, because it looks just like the HAP AC, but they just heated it up and then stretched it, just kind of pulled it out. So it's got the same kind of plastic foot that will mount on the bottom or on the side. So it's, it's aesthetically pleasing, so that's nice.
Yeah.
It, Evan, I do see that it supports a lot of the frequency or LTE bands that I was given Microtik flak for in the past. Is Sprint has a lot of spectrum that's close but a little bit different than a lot of people, and so like for their PCS band, I forget what the other that's band 2 it looks like, but the entire of PCS is band 25, and so if you got a band 2 LTE device, it would not have worked on Sprint's network, but it'd work on anybody else that had PCS. and same with one of the lower frequencies. And this seems to support all of that. It doesn't support the new T-Mobile frequency because it's new, but looks like it supports it just about anything else people are going to be using.
Very nice. So we had a question in the Slack the other day. Dave was asking how to graph stats on a pure IPsec interface, right? So in Microtik, well, in a lot of devices, you do it in Cisco too, you can create an IPsec tunnel as it exits a kind of an outgoing interface towards, say, the internet, for example. You can do that and it will encrypt stuff as it moves across that IPsec tunnel. But since it's not technically like a virtual interface in there, sometimes it's hard to keep stats on that stuff. And so Dave was asking, well, I'm in that scenario. I'm in that boat. How do I actually track this stuff somehow, you know, in my network management system, my network monitoring system? How do I pull that? And I thought Miller actually came up with the most creative solution. I was curious to see what you guys thought about it. But he said, basically, create a simple queue for the traffic that's going to go over the tunnel, you know, that really doesn't have a limit on it, and then just SNMP graph that. I thought that was pretty clever.
That's probably the most clever, simplest solution. I would probably look into how can I get rid of this standard IPsec tunnel and bring up, you know, IPsec L2TP or GRE or something that actually has an interface. Because I hate that, you know, interfaceless VPN stuff. It's just, it's complicated. Just get rid of it.
Yeah, I know in like older ASAs, they wouldn't do GRE. So it's basically, this is the thing that I always heard is anytime you ran into a problem, or whether you ran into a feature that didn't exist on an ASA, they'd say, well, it's a firewall, not a router. If you want to do that stuff, get a router. So that always annoyed me. When there's a ton of other firewall vendors that do support this stuff. And maybe the new Firepower stuff actually does support GRE tunnels. But I'm totally with you, Mike. I love creating a GRE interface and then just saying, hey, between these two points, all the GRE stuff, use IPsec to encrypt that. So as it exits, it gets IPsec encrypted. You don't have to think about it. So it makes it really simple to do all that stuff. And like you said, you've actually got now, it's not a physical interface, but it's a logical interface. And so the Microtik will treat it like it's any other interface. So yeah, you can graph those stats. You can do a lot of easier manipulation on it. Yeah. You can
torch,
treat it.
Packet, you know.
Anything you would do to a normal interface virtually, you could do to a GRE interface. So just, and also if somebody looks at the firewall, it's so much more intuitive to, so if you're doing pure IPsec, how do you know what's actually going to be encrypted over the tunnel? You have to go to the IPsec menu and you have to look at the policies and then see which packets are going to be marked as, you know, or considered interesting that are actually going to traverse that policy. Those are the ones that are going to get matched and then encrypted. If you're doing a GRE tunnel, all you do is you go to IP route and you just see what routes are supposed to go across that interface, right? It makes it so much simpler, more intuitive. And IPsec, when you're doing pure IPsec across stuff like that, without an interface, whenever you make a change to a policy on one side, it'll usually break the other router in some way until you update the policy on the other router. So there's some kind of coordination you have to do there. Whereas if you're doing it over a GRE tunnel, you want additional subnets to go through it, you just tell them to, hey, IP route those subnets over this joker, and then magically it works and they stay encrypted. So much simpler.
Yeah. And I'm assuming that there are benefits doing it the other way other than lack of, you know, device compatibility. that someone's gonna comment on the video about, but they better be compelling reasons, because this is, it's just so much better, in my opinion, to have an existing tunnel that's encrypted. And MegaTech now is so much easier. L2TP and I think GRE, you can both just click, you know, enter your IPsec secret. Done. Like, you don't have to worry about ciphers and phase one and phase two and this and that. Just put in your secret, and away you go.
Yeah, yeah. You're talking about, like, if you create a GRE interface, right from its options there, there's a checkbox that basically says use IPsec encryption, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, same for L2TP.
Yeah, and so it kind of takes some of the complexity out of it, some of the mystery out of it, because before you'd have to actually then go over to the IPsec and then create all the rules and match all the things. You don't really have to do that anymore. Now it's just a checkbox, right? That's right there inside the interface, so it makes it a lot easier.
Yeah,
but, I assume that only works to other MicroTechs, or you just happen to pick, or the MicroTech default just happens to match whatever your, non-MicroTech device actually supports.
Yeah, I think it just it's just enabling the IPsec stuff for you instead of you going over there and typing all this. So it's nothing proprietary, I don't believe. So long as everything matched on the other side, there was a phase one and phase two completion, I think it would just come up and be good.
Wouldn't a GRE tunnel require some more CPU usage, Mike? If I'm correct, I think there is some hit to there, because IPsec, most of the like 4011 and above routers have, and actually a lot of the MicroTechs have that built into hardware. But I think GRE, like, that would be the one slight negative. But I can't imagine it being a big hit to the CPU.
I was gonna say, to do the GRE encapsulation, I think it does have to go through the CPU to do that. But since it's really not doing anything too complex, I don't think it takes too much of a hit. But you're right, there is a lot of hardware now in MicroTech that has offload for IPsec. But I think it also comes down to the ciphers used, because I don't think all chipsets in all the MicroTechs all support the same ciphers. So you just have to make sure that your CPU supports whichever one you're trying to do, right?
Correct. Yeah. I'm thinking of the packet flow diagram in my head, and I think it would actually, because it has to go through and say, oh yeah, this is all this, and then we gotta pop it out as a fake interface, and then it goes through. So there's a little bit of a hit, but not a significant one, I wouldn't think. It'd be like doing a VLAN.
I remember seeing a MicroTech VPN, throughput performance comparison in the past, and I just Googled for one. This isn't the one I was thinking of, but Rick Frey,
I'm not
sure how to pronounce his Frey. On his website, he's got a table that has, tunnel technology, the bandwidth of the test, without the tunnel, bandwidth of the test with the tunnel, and then, how much different it was. And so looking here, IPsec is actually more efficient than even using a VLAN. Only losing 3.5% versus 15.8% of your capacity. I assume this is, going to vary based on the performance of your router, but it's a good indicator of the ability of the technology. My favorite is SSTP, and it's the second to worst at a 95.8% loss of performance. Good God.
It seems to get through hotel networks really well. When you're traveling and you're trying to VPN back in, that seems to get through the vast majority of them, whereas like L2TP or sometimes PPTP, sometimes those can be hit or miss, a little bit spotty.
I'll have to keep in mind that OVPN is terrible, but holy cow, IPsec beat out VLANs. I didn't realize that. I mean, I would have thought VLANs would be just super crazy fast, but
that I suppose it would depend on if the configuration software and hardware allowed for, you know, hardware accelerated VPN.
Yeah, it must not be software, because hardware accelerated VPN, I mean, there should be virtually no hit to it.
Yeah. And I would say a 3.5% would be virtually. And he's saying that he was using 2 8-port CRS routers, which means that that was a cloud router switch, which would not be a router, in my opinion.
But I guess it'd be a good way of showing the differences. If you had CCR 1072, they would probably all look the same.
Or very similar, yeah.
Yeah, and so I guess having a low CPU device would actually further prove the point of which is better and which is worse.
Yeah, and his numbers were all from RouterOS 6.27, and there's been a boatload of updates to RouterOS and the VPN encryption stuff in the last few. And what are we on? 6.4 something?
Yeah,
6.46.
Yeah, 6.46.
Yeah. There's probably been a significant number of pieces of hardware that have come out since he's actually done that. So
yeah. Back then, probably the cloud router, the CRS was the cool shit.
It was the hotness.
Yeah, and back in 2015. Ugh.
All right, so let's talk about a more generic topic. I've seen it pop up a couple of times here and there, and it is, what subnet sizes should you use in various parts of your network? So we're not talking about IPv6, we're talking about V4. And it usually surrounds people trying to use /31s in their network. I'll just go out on the record and say I've had success using /31s. I usually like to use them when I'm doing a direct connection to a customer. So if I'm handing it off like right to a guy and he's going into one of my routers, /31 is great, right? Because you're only going to burn 2 total IP addresses. Because most of the infrastructure IPs that I traditionally use are all public. So I want to use as few of those as possible. When it's all private addressing or carrier grade NAT, you know, RFC 19.8 or whatever it happens to be, if it's not internet routable, I kind of don't really care about subnet size so much then, right? I mean, obviously I take it into consideration, but it's not as important to me to save that stuff. And I've had very little problems with that. Usually it seems like my problems when I'm using /31s runs into people that just aren't familiar with it and can't wrap their head around it. So sometimes it's easier to use a /30, which there's 2 usable, but you're also burning a network and subnet. So right, that's 4 public IPs gone when I really could preferably use 2. So what else do people do? A lot of times /31s on point-to-points, I guess, like in between 2 routers. I mean, traditionally, I guess what it was /30s. And I have to say, a lot of the data center network, it is just /30s in there, because we had a lot of legacy equipment that probably would have been a little bit hit or miss. So am I crazy, or does MikroTik have some snafus when you're doing /31s with OSPF? Is that what it is?
I did /31s once. Because I was building something from scratch, and I'm like, I'm going to build this, not be wasteful, and blah, blah, blah. And then, like, I came back to it 6 months later, and I didn't remember what I had done. I was like, All right, let's rip all the /31 stuff. I don't got time to figure this out. Let's just change everything over to /30s. And I moved on. I guess that's what happens when you move from one fire to the other. You don't get to learn why the fire happened.
Right, and when we're talking about a /31, that would be, so like your IP address would be 192.168.0.0, and then you would set the network as 0.1, and then the guy at the other end would have his IP address as 0.1 and his network address as 0.0, and then those two would be able to communicate. I remember I tried it on a piece of kit. I don't remember what maker model it was, but it wouldn't take the 31. Like, it freaked out. But that was a long time ago.
Yeah, so I'll run a slash 31. So if I have, like, two routers that are directly connected to each other, which I don't have in my network, but if I were to do that, and it's, like, a cable between them, I wouldn't feel bad about a 31, but then again, I'm not going to have a public IP address space there, so I'm just going to use private. So I probably just stick with the standard slash 29, 29. And I use 29s because most of the time I have wireless equipment making the connection between two routers, and it's nice to be able to have the two pieces of equipment inside of that link addressable mm-hmm. in there as well, instead of having a completely separate whatever to do that. And then what I do is to have both of the pieces of equipment addressable is I have both of them use one of the routers as a gateway. And if by chance that router goes down, but I still have management through to the other one, I have the far router NAT its traffic to those two wireless devices as the gateway, so that then I can still access it. So if the router goes down for whatever reason, I can still access the wireless equipment and do diagnostics if I need to.
I do the same thing for that. Except I, in addition to that, when the link gets working again, I forget, and then I'm wondering at some point later, it's like, why is this router complaining nonstop about, you know, inbound packet with same as your source IP, same as self? I'm like, what is going on?
I blocked the router itself from talking, so I have input or output rules blocking it. It only will forward traffic into the link to those the IP addresses of the wireless equipment. That I don't want my routers talking to my wireless equipment. I don't want anything talking to my wireless equipment besides me.
Oh, I remembered. So you were talking about in your networks, you do mostly RFC 1918 for your infrastructure. So, or private addressing of some sort for your infrastructure bouncing around. Mm-hmm. In the data center environment, we would do public IPs everywhere. The idea being a customer that wanted to do a trace route to their equipment, they could actually see every hop in the chain come through, right? So if somebody's on the internet and they come into your network and you have RFC 1918, as soon as it hits that equipment, it's going to be, you know, all asterisks until it gets to a public IP that you maybe have on the customer mm-hmm. side. So that's definitely why we would do that. And it's, man, that is very useful. If something squirrely's gone onto the network, you can, that was one of the first things I would always say. Well, I'd always say, can you tell me what the source and destination of them are? Give me some trace routes from those places. And then as soon as I would fire that off, I would pull up their bandwidth graph and see that they were maxing out their bandwidth. Like 99% of the time they were maxing out their bandwidth. That was the problem. But in lieu of that, it's the internet. You're going to see crazy stuff. So it was awesome to be able to see the entire path so that I could just, you know, emulate the experience as best as possible, where I could try and see what was going on with them. Or it also helped me give them evidence. So I would jump into my test probes and I would test right through the exact same equipment, and you could see the exact same hops and everything was fine with my kit. So I could say, well, looks like something's going on over here, bud. You might, I guess doing private IP in there, you lose a little bit of visibility. But if your network, you've only got a slash 23 or something, then each one of those IPs is very precious. So I 100% understand. And in the little networks I build like that, I never use public IPs, right?
Yeah.
Stuff's
you can't. Well,
stuff's too valuable.
And the nice thing is for my customers going out to the internet, I can have them or their equipment do a trace route out.
Right.
And it's still going to report
you're gonna
that
see
stuff.
It.
I'm going to be able to see it and such. So I really don't care if somebody, we have firewalls and they'll maybe eventually die somewhat. But I don't care if somebody can reach into my network coming into me just out of the blue. I want my customers to go out and be able to get stuff back. Right. That's the benefit of having a customer, an inbound mainly network. So, yeah.
Well, I guess even then you can see the trace routes get all the way to your router and then stop anyway, right? So you know it's at least getting to your network.
Yeah. So
then you could troubleshoot past that.
Yeah. Well, and from there, even then, even if they're getting asterisks, I can see my equipment trying to reach back out, even though it has a private IP address. So I can, as long as they're doing the traceroute while I'm looking at the firewalls, I can hunt things down and figure it out.
So like if you're torching the interface, you'll see the stuff inbound and you'll see it moving through your routers. Just, it's not actually, returning successfully to the client, but you'll see it actually attempting, which is probably the important part there.
Yeah. These days I don't torch very much. I just use the MikroTik firewall a lot of the time. Now, admittedly, it's because I have the MikroTik firewall running on freaking everything, but I just don't use torch that often. Rarely. Very rarely.
Me neither.
You don't have to. Your life's glorious.
It's pretty amazing. This is the first time since I think August of 2002 that I haven't been on call, like 24/7 on call. This is like the first time, so it's pretty liberating. The other day, yesterday, I went for a walk, and I made sure to put my phone in my pocket, and I was going, and it was like, I don't know, it was twisting my pocket, and it was annoying me, and I was like, but you got to have it. And then I realized, you know what? I don't have to have it. It's one of those surreal moments where I don't know. It just it's been such a part of my life for so long that I think it's going to take a little while before I fully understand that. It's weird.
Yeah.
So be jealous, everyone listening, because all of you guys taking care of networks, and I know you're always on call. You know what? Probably the most troublesome thing for me this week was is learning how to use a Mac.
Oh, why would you do that to yourself?
Because it's Red Hat. You have two choices. You can get a Mac or you can get a Lenovo, and the Lenovo has Linux on it, so you're gonna use an open source operating system ish or a derivative thereof. So I went with the Mac. I thought that was the better choice, and it's just everything is just slightly different and weird, and it's holy cow, it drove me crazy at first. I had to do some stuff to it, like some heavy stuff. And I think a lot of it was just me being unfamiliar with it entirely. Like when you click on a window, I was like, where is all the context stuff? There's nothing. Eventually I realized there's a bar up at the top and that's where all of your stuff's at. And then it's got one big giant mouse pad, like the size of your face, and there's no right click. And that was driving me crazy. And then I accidentally, click two fingered, and I was like, oh my god, there's the right click. It's a two finger click. So it's there's lots of little things that anybody who's probably grown up with Macs could roll their eyes at. It's all brand new to me, so it's just aggravating the crap out of me, but I'm slowly getting there. I don't know that I'm fully going to assimilate. I think I'm going to continue to use my Windows desktop for a lot of my normal stuff, but I'm gonna have to force myself to use this Mac a lot more, just so I'll really become accustomed to it.
Yeah, every time I have a customer that's having internet issues with a Mac, it's a really painful experience. I've gotten better, but not that Windows is good. Windows isn't great, and there's nothing great about it. But I just know where everything is, and that just pays for so much.
I know. Like, over a career of building a workflow off of a single operating system, you get pretty fast at it, right? You get pretty adept, and now all of a sudden, everything's just a little different. Like, Control-T doesn't open a new tab in Chrome on a Mac. Oh. It's Command-T. It's not Control-Page-Up and Page-Down to switch between tabs. It's control. No, it's command, option, left, and right. So it's just everything's just different enough to like drive me crazy. But you know what I was doing? I was trying to list files. I was trying to browse around like on my command prompt the other day in my Windows machine. I kept typing ls, like ls, ls over and over, trying to list. It's driving me nuts. So I don't know, man. I'm starting to just do more command line Linux stuff, and I've forgotten how to do all the command line stuff in Windows. So
yeah, I have
my brain is so confused
all the time after setting up all those VMs, because everything was without a GUI, because I'm not going to waste the extra VM space on a GUI. Never logging into this thing. And everything was command prompt, or terminal, I guess. And, ls. It's a beautiful... It is. You know, I do miss that sometimes when I'm in Windows. I also don't miss at all whatsoever file system permissions or systemctl. Whatsoever.
Well, in Sentinels, I got used to service whatever, mm-hmm. and now it's systemctl, so I have to remember to stop and then do this. So it's just things slightly changing. But that little change, I can get used to that. But it's when everything changes, it's kind of halting for me. But I'm getting there.
What about that UN? Are people calling it UNI4? For the FCC letting people use the 45 megahertz.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's part of it. I didn't know that they had made a full, like, I knew the spectrum was being talked about for a long time, but I never knew it was called four until not that long ago. I don't know if it was always called four or they just made it up recently.
Yeah, so I guess for those who aren't in the know, there's a small portion of the 5.9 gigahertz band, about 45 megahertz, that the FCC is letting WISPs use for in this emergency situation. You have to fill out a experimental license or emergency license paperwork, and there's a lot of stuff you have to say. You probably want a lawyer. I know most of the little brothers who've done it had a lawyer do it. Brock Tice, Chad Walks, a couple other guys. Joe Novak was like one of the original guys who did it with WISPA, and they all got their licenses and are using that 45 megahertz. Most of them, I think all of those guys, are Cambium. I know Ubiquiti said that they would have it available, and I know Rory Conway down in Phoenix, he got it, and he's a largely Mimosa guy. And Mimosa said day one that they had it rolling and were going to have it pumped out. So it was a pretty straightforward thing. I was talking to them a little bit ago.
What's that? That sounds interesting. How do you unlock that in your system? Because, it's not going to just be there natively, right?
No. It depends on your manufacturer. We don't know how Ubiquiti is doing it right now. Cambium is...
Nor do they.
I'm going to... Dude, I swear, they're going to do it in the most shittiest way possible. And it's going to hit the market. And somebody's going to just... push that firmware out, and everyone in the United States is going to have an extra 45 megahertz worth of spectrum to use. And somebody's going to be really pissed at Ubiquiti. So, which is probably why they aren't going to do it very, very quickly, because they have to figure out how to do it. So,
it's got to be some kind of like license you type in or something, right? That'll
I'm guessing.
You can't just blanket make it that easy for everybody to roll that stuff.
Yeah, so... probably what it'll do is it's like the DFS stuff that they did, whereas you have to send in paperwork to them saying that you're going to professionally install it, and then you get a code and your company name, and you plug that in, and then it works. And that's just used for like the M5 and the AC stuff, so I could see them doing it that way. Still not a great way to go, in my opinion, because then it's just, I just have to share out my company name and the code again. So they'll still sue you, probably, but don't do that. So, but for the people who actually do have it running, Cambium, it's a firmware update, and then you get a special unlock key that gives you that extra 45 megahertz. And my understanding is that that unlock key is good for 60 days, and you have to get a new one from Cambium for that to continue working. Mimosa, I don't know about if it's the exact same. You have to do a firmware update and a unlock. And you have to do the unlock in a particular way. So contact Mimosa, and you're going to contact Cambium or Mimosa either way. But Mimosa, you contact them, they'll give you a specific key and the instructions for how to unlock your radio and the firmware to do it. You do all that, and then you get that 45 megahertz. And I think Cambium and Mimosa were both like same day they had it rolling, which is really cool and big pluses in my books. Although I'm kind of a Mimosa fanboy, as it were. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, for sure. But you, I mean, this is a very temporary thing, right? So you said 60 days, so maybe up to a year or something.
So FCC is only giving you 60 days, and you have to renew it at the end of that 60 days, and you still have to have it, you know, the need for it. But the FCC is also in proceedings to make this available to us outright. And so I think that's why we were able to get it, is because they were already in process of developing the rules for us to get it. So some people might be hoping they can just keep renewing until the FCC opens it up.
Now, how much spectrum did you say? 40 megahertz?
45.
45.
45. So really, most people run, what, like 20 megahertz channels?
Yeah, that's the, if you go by the, who's that company that does the report? Preseam? Yeah, Preseam. Yeah, if you go by Preseam, the 20 megahertz is by far the largest channel size. 40, 30, then larger than that are the other channel sizes. I think 10's really small, somewhere in between 40 and 30. So yeah, by large, you can, you'd be able to get two new sectors, although a lot of guys are either A, putting their access points, or B, using that as backhaul, because
backhaul,
yeah, and you can just, if you have 40 megahertz of clean spectrum, you can push a boatload of bandwidth through that.
Yeah, especially if you're being extremely directional, right?
Yeah,
then maybe you could actually reuse that a few times here and there, going in different directions and stuff like that.
So. Oh, times, yeah,
yeah. Excellent.
And then I put a link in the show notes for a map that I made. These are exclusion zones. So even if you may be granted access to the spectrum, there are, I forget how many, 81 locations around the country that have a 75-kilometer exclusion zone. So even if you get the access to the spectrum, you can't use it if you're in one of these circles.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I know a couple of guys who are down by Colorado Springs and are kind of SOL there. But, yeah, there's quite a good portion of the United States you can't use it. But I'd say at least 90% you're fine.
Yeah, it's just taking a quick look at it. Most of it is the coast of Southern California, and then kind of working its way back through Vegas to the Nevada test range. Bunch of the New Mexico test ranges. And then quite a bit along the East Coast, with an obvious heavy concentration in the Virginia to New York area.
Very cool. That was a good find, Tommy. Thanks for remembering that. Mm-hmm. I saw some of that stuff rolling through, but I didn't really know what you guys were talking about, so it's nice to actually be educated. I needed the related TLDR, bud.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, dude, we're at the hour and a half mark, so let's get close to sticking a fork in it. I just, for the sake of sanity and fun, I just thought I'd ask you guys what you're doing as part of your quarantine regimen to stay sane. You know, what are you doing to try and bring some normalcy to your life? Mikey, I'll let you go first.
I already worked from home for 70 hours a week, so not much has changed.
Right, but you got a significant other. You know, she's trying to maintain some sense of normalcy. What are you guys doing to?
She works for a retirement community.
Woof.
So she is still working just the same as me. But she actually work is a bit more stressful for her.
Yeah, I would imagine.
Because like they have, you know, it's not a physical lockdown. You know, the door's not locked, but you know they've banned unnecessary people from coming in. Tried to discourage residents from leaving. It's not nursing, so they can't just make them stay. You know, some of these people still have their own cars, but if you're gonna tell, 600 old people that they can't go anywhere other than the doctor, you then have to go get their groceries, and you have to go do this, and you have to now, screen all the packages that are coming in, and they have to sit over in this area for 48 hours before they're actually distributed to the resident, and you know. So then, while her her regular duties are much less, her new duties are significantly more. And then she's not the one out shopping, but she's trying to coordinate stuff, and it's just, and you got 600 old people that don't want to listen to
they've
you
earned
can't
their,
go here, you can't
they've earned
that.
Their right not to listen to you anymore.
Yeah, so there's a little bit of her work stress kind of bleeding over a little bit, but it's not too bad.
That's good. And as everybody knows, Mikey is the least stressful person they've ever met. You know, very very calming, very soothing presence to have
around.
That's a damn lie.
But I do have different personas. I actually joined a 5G awareness Facebook group today, just to my goal was to do some slight recon and then troll them.
And then you found out they were making some pretty good points, and you're really on board.
Yeah, my life has changed. it seems as though there's plenty of other people already doing that, and so I don't have to troll all these really stupid people.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, you are a masochist, dude.
I went there just to make fun of them, but people already are.
So then you just felt bad.
I don't feel bad for the stupid people at all. I'm probably just going to hide the group for a while and circle back later and see what it's like.
All right, well, good times. You're a weirdo, Mike. Tommy, what are you doing to maintain some normalcy over there?
So,
what's your quarantine regimen?
All things considered, my personal life has not changed pretty much at all. Just because I don't interact with people practically ever, all things considered. I go into the office, I sit down in my chair for 9 to 14 hours, and then I come home, and then I go to sleep because I'm exhausted and tired. So in a lot of ways, my general life hasn't changed at all in that regard. My dad is a dentist, and the ADA and Colorado Dental Association said, even though we are far cleaner, dental offices are far cleaner than a pot shop, which are open in Colorado. No, people, dentists are all closed all throughout Colorado. If you have a toothache, you ain't getting it fixed. There, and there was guys who got busted by the cops for taking care of somebody who had a hurting tooth because the ADA and Colorado Dental Association said, oh no, unless it's life threatening, you can't do anything. And do you know, yeah, do you know how much dentistry work is done to prevent your life from being threatened?
I have no
idea. I'm guessing very little.
Very, very little. You are not going to die unless it's a really bad infection. But most dentistry is preventative work to keep that from happening.
Right.
So, yeah, so my dad and mom and have been home, and my sister's a marketer, and all of her marketing stuff was event marketing, which kind of is a little slow right now. Just a little bit. Sucks. You know, they took just a hint of a hit. So they've all
slump.
They've all been home, and so whenever I go over and hang out with them, it's like a little bit rough in that regards. But it's good to have everybody home. Easter weekend, we're getting all together, getting the whole family. My brother, actually, I shared that with the Little Brothers Wisp group. I helped my brother out a little bit with that mask thing.
That was really cool.
Yeah, so that's been cool. Just various, like, just staying active. But I'm essential. I have paperwork saying the government's essential. This is the first time in my life anybody has ever said that I'm essential to them. And it was the United States government saying that. So,
well, your tax money is very essential, if you realize that.
Yeah, I'm the only one paying it right now. So, no. Yeah, all things considered, yeah, my day-to-day job life hasn't changed much. Socially, I don't go out to bars or anything. I go to friends' houses, and there's three of us.
Are you still eating out? You still, like, well, not obviously going to a restaurant and eating there, but are you still picking up food and stuff like that? Or?
I cook.
You most, cook?
Yeah. So it's not like it's a, yeah. I mean, most of the restaurants around me either A, shut down, or they did take out. So there's like, I think there was like a Mexican food place that just completely shut down, but otherwise it's takeout. So I just go to take out food. And I mean,
I can imagine that there's more than two or three restaurants in your town.
Well, Roggen doesn't have any restaurants anymore. There's a gas station. You don't want to eat their food. It's been expired for 5 years minimally. But yeah, there's three restaurants in town, including the Mexican food place. So, but yeah, it's, you know, you go swing by there if you're really hungry.
Yeah, we've had a couple of restaurants close their doors and say, yeah, we're not opening back up even after this thing is over. They're just completely closing up. It was like a Mexican chain restaurant and a burger joint that was kind of a smaller mom and pop place. They're saying, yeah, we're just, this is it for us. So that stinks. I guess my life, 4 days a week, I would either go play pickleball, right? So I'd go and like interact with humans, or I'd go to my wife's cycle class and forcibly interact with a few people there. But yeah, like you said, I've been working from home for the last year and a half. So really very little change for me. Well, I mean, you know, other than me completely changing jobs and throwing everything into a whirlwind, but you know, really, it doesn't feel that much different. And then my wife, you know, she was so used to teaching that I just said, hey, let's do your classes in the garage and I'll do them with you. So she has been thoroughly murdering me. That chick is so strong. It is bananas how strong she is.
Yeah.
Because we're doing cycle in there, which is fine. And I'm stronger than her in that. But then we do this weight stuff, and dude, she's like tossing that stuff around, and it is killing me.
Yeah,
it's murdering me with my 7-inch pythons I've got over here. You know, just yeah. So I am unaccustomed to lifting weights. So it's this quarantine can't end too soon. Like I was saying, I don't know what's gonna get me first, the COVID or this. So this to lifting weights with her.
Yeah,
but I don't know, man. It just doesn't feel too crazy. I guess my stay sane routine, because it was a little weird for a while. So we're not eating out. We are just eating at home, purely at home. And I craved some fast food for like the first week and a half, but I'm done with that. I've gotten over that hump. And then Master Pancake Theater has been streaming like Wednesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays. So I've been having a blast watching their streams, watching stuff coming out of the UK, still doing that. Thoroughly avoiding Tiger King. Apparently tomorrow they're doing some special with Joel McHale, and I love Joel McHale. I was a huge Community fan. I'm still a huge Community fan. And The Soup. So I might actually watch that one because Joel McHale's hosting it. So
yeah,
it might suck me in. Suck me in with that.
But, I haven't watched any Tiger King, but I feel like I have a complete an understanding of every single Tiger King reference that is made.
So many memes.
Yeah.
One of my very first meetings. So the very first training I was in, this thing that was like blue jeans. They use blue jeans, you know, which is like an equivalent to Zoom or whatever. And so we're doing that, and some guy pops in and he goes, "Hey, you cool cats and kittens." I was like, oh my God, which is one of the weirdos on that show say whenever they do their web thing. So I don't know. It's very, very pervasive. It's a fungus growing inside the American culture. It's killing us all.
Yeah.
Black mold.
That and video games.
Oh my goodness.
Your video game stuff was kind of cool, but that's been also something. I have a bunch of friends who, I've just been like scheduling time to play with them, and really it's just the voice chat to interact, but I've been scheduling time to play with them, and God, I probably spent a couple $100 on video games just so I, for everything that I can play with everybody. It's bad.
You know, I've made it a point lately to try and, people I know that are maybe a little bit more isolated or that are very unaccustomed to this, I've been trying to like schedule a time to at least text them every week or actually call them every week. So I've been trying to be better about that sort of stuff. Just for the people that are less accustomed to it, you know, I mean, what is it? Was it going to burn 20 minutes of my time and, you know, hopefully helps keep them all alive for a little bit longer?
Yeah.
Because I was talking to one person and they were like, yeah, I invited somebody to come over to my house. So they're already like trying to break quarantine. It's like, God, Jesus, you know, it's just, you know, if I can call you and maybe that will hold you off for just a little bit longer, let's do that. It's crazy. So people just aren't cut out for the thug life. That's all I know. Oh, man. Let's definitely put a fork in it. Let's stab it. Because I've got D&D coming up. This is going to be the first remote Dungeons and Dragons I've ever done. I'm going to make my wife come in here and get a taste of this. It'll be pretty interesting, I'm sure. So, Mikey, if people are on the internet and they wanted to get a hold of you, how would you have them go about that?
You can go to patreon.com/thebrotherswisp. You can sign up, join there, and then somebody else can help you with whatever it is you want. I'm busy. I'm extremely busy.
Jeez Louise.
You're perfecting that line. Perfecting that line.
There you go. Classic as always. All right, Tommy, how would you have folks out on the internet get a hold of you?
To be honest, as Mike said, Brothers Wisp, I do have my own website now. Lostcreek.tech. Wow, jeez. So if you want to reach out there, I even have a blog post. Got that finally figured out and working. Screw WordPress. God damn that shit.
Posted it today?
Yeah, I did. I finally got it working. So, but Brothers Wisp or over at the Mimosa forums, I'm William 5. I can fix your wireless issues there with Mimosa stuff, and I'll answer other questions too, as is blatantly obvious on the Mimosa forums.
All right. Well, I'll try and toss you a link in the show notes so that everybody can more easily find you. They can just click a button.
Sweet.
Excellent. So if you want to find me, I'm Greg at gregsoul.com, where I very occasionally blog over there. I say the same thing every time. I've actually started putting more stuff out, though. Also, you can find me at the Brothers of Wisp Slack. That's patreon.com/Brothers of Wisp. That's still... man, I have to tell you, this first week kind of threw me for a loop, but I'm still getting in there and I'm still interacting. Again, like I said, sometimes I'm getting to something and there's already... it's a thread that's 35 comments deep, so... you guys are making me feel inadequate. That's all I know. But no, I love it. I love it. It's such a good exchange of information. Dude, I learn stuff every week in there. Thank you guys so much for contributing. whether it's a meme picture or whether you're explaining the inner operations of BGP, it's all good. It's all right now. It's all needed. You know, it doesn't matter what you have to contribute. It's definitely worth putting out there into the world. So thank you guys. Thank you, listeners. Questions, comments, please keep firing them at us. And we'll talk to you guys next time. Bye.
See ya.
We're loud and annoying, but we're informative facts. We're not disappointing. Just give us a listen, because fun is the mission. I'm telling you, you don't know what you are missing. Ideas and some good comedy given. If you missed the show already, don't worry, you're forgiven.